This is work I did at Yale with Michael Fitznoll and Brian Ford in the DDIS lab. And so let me quickly go over what Tor is. As a proper background, you have Bob, and Bob wants to access some resource on the internet, such as Facebook, but he wants to either do it anonymously or he's behind some great firewall and he needs to circumvent it. And so he'll jump onto Tor, which is a set of anonymizing relays, and he'll connect to them recursively, establishing an onion route into Facebook such that any of the servers or any individual within this network only knows the ingress and egress hosts. So if we look at specifically at server 01, it only knows about server 10 and server 22. Likewise, Facebook knows nothing about Bob and only server 22. So if we look at the scenario where Bob's talking to Facebook, say he's in an instant message chat or something like that, and he's got these onion relays all to himself, he's going to have this low latency, high bandwidth chat that he can have, and he's not noticing any delays, and it seems like it's almost like he's connected directly to Facebook. However, if we start introducing additional users, such as Alice, who's going to go and use YouTube, and Carol, who's going to go and start using BitTorrent, he's going to all of a sudden notice that his latency is now really slow, and he's got no bandwidth. And so maybe if he's looking at pictures, he notices it's really, really slow. And so we have these kind of performance problems. And the key issue that we're investigating in this research is the issue between two onion relays. So we're going to specifically focus on the situation with server 10 and server 11, where we have all these users crossing over it. And so the real problem is let's take a step back and look at what Tor is doing. And Tor is passing along application data inside a Tor packet using TLS on top of TCP. And so each one of these Tor streams or circuits actually goes through a single TCP connection. So each one of these users, so if we see those three lines up there between the two servers, that's actually a single TCP connection. So they're sharing all that state, they're sharing the TCP buffer. And so that introduces some interesting issues. And the first one we're interested in is cross-circuit head-of-line blocking. So if we have the TCP incoming queue head, and a message comes in, and that's, say, part of Carol's message, and then her segment gets dropped for whatever reason, and Bob and Alice's cells or circuit messages come in, theoretically, Tor could go ahead and process Bob and Alice's cells and push them along onto the next relay. However, because of the way TCP works, all messages have to be received in order, and so because of that missing segment, these data packets are inaccessible, causing unnecessary delays to Bob and Alice's circuits. There's also an issue of TCP buffers that can potentially create delays. So let's look again at an outgoing queue instead. In this case, we have users nicely pushing packets into the queue, or Tor pushing them into the queue for the users. And then all of a sudden, Carol and Alice start pushing in serious amounts of data. And Bob comes along and says, well, I want to go and put mine in there. And because mine's really small and I'm looking for low latency, I think I should get a fair share of the current TCP queue. But because of the way TCP queues work, once data has been written into it, you can't go ahead and push data ahead of existing written data. So Bob's message, instead of going where it might belong due to some priority or shared TCP buffer, is going to have to be pushed all the way into the back of the queue, where he's going to have to wait for all the other messages to be written to the network before his actually gets to be sent out. And so I've gone over some issues that Tor and TCP share, and I'm going to go and talk about how we can, or what the existing problem or solutions to that those problems are, and then I'm going to show you how we actually tackle these problems using two of the tools that we've built at Yale called UTCP and UTLS, which stand for unordered TCP and unordered TLS. Then I'm going to show how we explicitly use this to eliminate head-of-line blocking within Tor, and I'll give you some future directions that we've got lined up. So our goals specifically are to improve Tor or QoS for low latency and low bandwidth systems. And one of those challenges is to eliminate the head-of-line blocking, which I showed earlier, as well as to improve improve latency for low latency, low bandwidth applications. So what we want to do is we want to use the existing transports. We want to use TCP TLS. We don't want to have to go and re-engineer a new transport layer for Tor because that's not easy and that's going to require lots of additional man hours to go and, well, one, convince people this is the right approach, and two, there's been years of engineering that's gone into Tor and we don't want to go in and monkey around with that. Which leads into minimal modifications for Tor. If we're going to get people to adopt this, they're going to want to trust the software that they've been using. They're not going to want to have to go and trust thousands of new lines of code. And perhaps most importantly, we want to have interoperability with existing Tor deployments. We don't want to have to say, we've got this new version of Tor, and it requires everybody to now use this new version of Tor. We'd like to eventually see that this, we can just go in and install this on ORs as necessary and as well as OPs as necessary without having to redeploy the entire Tor network. So there's existing projects. The first set of projects looks at using different transports. And you can see the details TCP over UDP project a few years ago, PCTCP, which is using IPsec and also UDP Tor. But these all have different trade-offs. For example, DTLS TCP relies on using user space networking stack, which has potential performance overheads, as well as the fact that at that point in time, and maybe not so much anymore, there were no really good open source, license agreeable user space networking stacks. Or if we look at the case of UDP, we're going to potentially have to talk about adding reliability into Tor, because as of now, Tor assumes that it's running on top of TCP, which provides the reliability and in order nature for all the circuits that get, or all the cells that get passed along any given circuit. And then if we go and talk about something like IPsec, as the previous speaker mentioned, IPsec is not really like a universally configurable system, and so you're going to have to be potentially talking about some user space IPsec stack that's portable across all platforms, and that's probably some direction that's going to require a significant amount of engineering. Another approach is the one connection per circuit. And so in this case, instead of having a single TCP socket for each circuit, we're going to go in and have one unique connection per circuit. However, this also has problems because there's also limitations on how many open sockets you can have in any given application. And then there's also potential performance hits because you're now going to be having lots of open sockets or open connections to a single end host, and you're going to potentially be wasting bandwidth due to additional ACKs and congestion control and other unfun things that might come up due to this behavior. Another alternative is the one connection per priority, and this is actually something that was recently done by Torquestra, where they looked at separating the bandwidth, or separating, having two separate connections, one for the low latency, low bandwidth packets, and then another one for high bandwidth passages. And this actually showed a significant improvement. However, there's still some possibility that may leak may leak information about the flows. They made a nice argument that that's probably not going to be such an issue. However, there was still an issue that this required, well, there's double active sockets, no shared congestion state, but there's also an issue that this requires a redeployment of Tor across the network, or at least between all the ORs that might be communicating with each other. So in general, every single one of these approaches had the common issue that we're looking at potentially redeploying the entire Tor network, and that's something we are trying to avoid.
Just in practice, like how many circuits would we typically see overlapping on a pair of Tor nodes like that?
Unfortunately, we haven't looked into it in that great detail at this point.
Tens of thousands.
And there you go. So yeah, makes it a very practical problem. I think if you look at the work done by the DTLS TCP folks back in the day, they did a deeper survey into the problem, and they noticed that there was significant congestion just on a handful of different active circuits going through the same shared pathways. And as I'll show you in our evaluation, we saw it, but we didn't do as significant evaluation at this point. We only have some preliminary data points so far. But so onwards and upwards. So now that I've given you what we're looking at, let me go and show you how we actually solve. Well, let me give you an overview of what tools we have, and then I'll go and show you how we use those tools to at least resolve the head of line blocking. So the first tool is unordered TCP. And so this is a small kernel modification and module we've done, well, that's approximately 600 lines of code. We ported this over to the Linux 2.6 kernel, as well as the 3 kernel, and we've got this stored locally at Yale, which is freely available, and I'll give you a link at the end of the slides, and you can also communicate with me to find out more information. But there's also some exciting news that there's actually some recent IETF activity with some folks at Apple, actually one of the original authors of the UTCP software stack. He has been working at Apple, and apparently there's some significant industry interest in getting this more standardized. But before I go into more depth on that, let's go into what UTCP actually offers. The first thing is it offers out-of-order reads, which effectively allows us to get past this, we're missing a segment, but we still have useful data somewhere in the queue. It gives us the ability for a priority sending. So if one, for whatever reason, if Tor ends up spitting out a humongous cell or several cells together for a single user that's using, say, BitTorrent, we can now insert that low latency small cell ahead of those, or at least in the midst of them, so that user doesn't have to wait for all those nasty BitTorrent users' cells to be processed. And then there's also something that I'm not going to go into too much depth, but it might be of interest, which is it has the ability to disable congestion control, so we can actually look at application layer congestion control. So the first thing I'm going to go over is how UTCP does out-of-order reads. But before I do that, I want to go over what's a typical scenario in TCP. And so it begins with a application actively receiving data, reading data from the TCP socket, and we get incoming segment 101. And since that's in order, it automatically gets processed up into the application space upon a read. Later on, say 201 gets dropped, however, we receive 301. Because this is out of order, as I mentioned earlier, this is just going to have to sit into the TCP queue, even if this is potentially processable by the application, because it doesn't have the 201 and it's out of order. And once 201 actually arrives, we're going to go ahead and push that up into the application space, and it can read 201 and 301. To get UTCP to work, you begin by first doing a set sock op that specifies we're now in UTCP mode, and it's going to actually prepend onto every single read a segment number. So if you look at the example now, when 101 comes in, when we do a read, we actually get that this is segment 101 as the first few bytes, and so the application will just chop that off, recognize where that belongs inside of the application space, and push that up for processing. And so when 301 comes, instead of having to wait for 201 to come, this actually can be read, it provides the sequence number, and the application can go ahead and process it. Likewise, when 201 comes, that's going to naturally be processed as well. And so effectively now, as long as we're getting, we have some mechanism of framing such that we know where the different datagrams or cells within the TCP buffer are, we can actually go and process reads out of order. The next thing is priority sending. So this will give us the ability to give priority to the low latency, low bandwidth circuits, while still respecting the bandwidth constraints or demands of the higher bandwidth, high latency circuits. Again, this is initiated by set sock op, and when we do that, it basically changes the queue, the TCP queue, to look like this. And so you can see each one of these now has a priority identifier, and that basically specifies where it belongs inside the queue. So now when Bob wants to go ahead and insert a packet, he's going to go ahead and prepend a priority to each packet. And in this case, Bob already has a packet with priority 0, so Tor will potentially increment that into being 1. And the TCP kernel module will go ahead and find the lowest priority where that belongs and insert it. Now Bob doesn't have to wait for both of these larger cells like Alice's and Carol's packets to go and be written to the TCP or written to the network. His can be jump ahead of theirs. And as well as the ability to optionally squash or erase data from the buffer. For example, say Carol's cell or circuit gets terminated, but she still has cells waiting inside of a send buffer, we can actually go in and destroy those or remove them and not waste bandwidth on Carol's data. And the last one was the ability to disable congestion control. That's again an issue with set sock op. And so actually in the Linux kernel, you can have TCP congestion control modules that you can just load through a mod probe and then specify which one you want through the set sock op. And for the null congestion, all we do is set the congestion window size to be the maximum size possible every single time it queries. That's pretty straightforward. And so UTCP provides us these wonderful features, out-of-order reads, priority sending, and the ability to disable congestion control, but there was still the remaining challenge of, well, Tor uses TLS, it doesn't use TCP directly, so we need out-of-order reads for TLS, and we also need a framing mechanism for out-of-order messages, because we're not gonna be reading messages directly from the head of the TCP queue, so we don't know necessarily where Tor cells might exist within inside of that. However, to answer the issue for that, we at least know that TLS provides framing, so we at least have the issue where we can somewhat easily find TLS packets, and I'll go over that next. And so now on to UTLS. For UTLS, let's begin with the processing of a TLS packet. TLS begins with a header. The header involves a type, a version, and a length, and we're particularly interested in application data, and we're interested in TLS version 1.2. And the length field can be up to 16 kilobytes. So when we're actually looking for this, we're going to look for a data message that fills up or up to this point. And once we've got enough data, we can go ahead and load that up, and that's going to be a record. So each TLS message comes in as a record. And once we have a complete record, we're going to go ahead and do an authentication check or a MAC check. The MAC check actually relies on internal state called the record number, and this is basically a field that gets incremented after each packet that gets processed. And for the authentication check, it uses the MAC and the record number to verify that the record is properly formed. And if that checks out all right, we can go ahead and decrypt the record and push up the data into the application space. So that leads into some challenges in actually handling these out of order. And the first, well, let's, if we look at a TCP queue, that we have a few segments missing. And so we can see Carol and Bob's first segments are not going to be valid TLS packets because they're missing sections. We're going to go ahead and have to find where the first TLS record is. And so the challenge is identifying them. So first, we're going to search for a header. And so we're looking for something that looks like this. And so clearly, we'd find that Carol has a valid header, except that the size is not sufficient because we're missing bytes. So we're going to continue searching on until we eventually get to an Alice header. And because the Alice header has sufficient bytes, we're going to go ahead and assume that that's a valid TLS record. And we can also verify by looking at the next packet or the next several bytes to verify that that also is a valid TLS header as a way to have some sort of sanity check that we're actually looking at a valid TLS record. After that, we need to perform the MAC check. But that requires us to guess the record number. So because we skipped over a couple of records and we don't know exactly how many, we now have to kind of guess what record number we're at. And so that's going to require that we test a few sequences of potential record numbers, which could eventually result in us failing those. And in typical TLS fashion, a record fail will result in the termination of the TLS connection. And so what we want to do is prevent that. So whenever we are processing out of order and we get a failure, we're just going to roll back the state and continue on processing. But if we're not out of order, then we're just going to fail as normally otherwise. Finally, once we've got a proper MAC check and blah, 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 we're going to go on to requiring an explicit IV. So when you're talking about decrypting a packet, you can either use implicit IVs, which requires in-order state. But because we're doing these out of order, we want to negotiate a TLS connection between two peers using explicit IVs. And then, of course, we're going to decrypt and deliver. So using these two tools, UTP and UTLS, let's go ahead and see how we worked with Tor to eliminate head-of-line blocking. Let's see. So recall that Tor has multiple circuits sharing a single TCP stream, and each of these circuits passes a datagram or cell. So we can actually find these record. Once we find out where these cells are, we can actually pass them along to the appropriate cell to be processed. And it's also equally important to state that each circuit has independent state. Therefore, we can actually pass along these without any issues. So now let's look at how we're actually going to be processing the cells. So an important thing that we found out was that Tor actually writes cells on record boundaries within TLS. So we don't have to worry about mucking around with the Tor source code to make sure that Tor is actually performing that behavior. And so if you look at, well, that was not supposed to be. So that's a TLS record, and each TLS record is a Tor cell. And fortunately, each cell specifies its circuit, so we don't have to add any information there. So the last question we had was, can we process cells out of order? And we possibly could, but there's some challenges associated with that, which are, one, we don't know if there's a cell that comes out of order, for example, destroy, that could end up destroying a circuit before we've processed all the data packets. Tor is assumed to be in order. Do we really want to be going and changing that semantics? And so for now, we just assume no. And also, there's one other issue, is that backwards compatible. If we start processing cells out of order and forward them on the system, the other ORs that might not be doing out of order operations wouldn't expect that out of order cell, and it could break, or it would break the system. So for now, we're just going to process the cells in order. And we need to add a sequence number to each cell so that we can actually reorder cells as they come in and make sure that we process them in order. Effectively, we're making cells in order, but circuits allowed to go out of order. And so we increase the header size from 5 to 7 bytes, but we keep the payload the same. So the headers are only shared between the two different ORs, and this is something that the entire circuit never sees. And as long as the payload is kept the same size, we can actually have two ORs inside the system, or as long as adjacent ORs support the protocol, they work fine, but we could have any number of incompatible ORs with inside a single circuit and still use the out-of-order Tor operations. And so in terms of actually code modification, we only talked about changing 95 lines in a 80,000 line code base, so not a significant change. And most of that work was just going and processing the cell and forwarding it along to the proper circuit to be processed later. But we still have some deployment challenges, and that's one that UTCP and UTLS aren't adopted in heavy. I mean, we don't have any mainstream kernels that actually run them. They're only in our kernel repositories at Yale. So that's one issue that we need to deal with. And for the most part, we're talking about issues where circuits might be sharing a or we're more concerned about the issues where Roger said they've got 10,000 circuits between a single pair of ORs, and so this isn't going to be an issue that we have to be concerned about as much on the OPs to ORs issues or the clients to the ORs. So perhaps we could just talk about getting the ORs to either run the kernels themselves, or we could provide virtual machines for the ORs providers to run themselves, and then they can separate the Tor and this unique kernel into a safe environment to be executed without having to worry about any security vulnerabilities that might exist with inside the kernel from hurting the rest of their system. And then there's also an issue about UTOR adoption. For example, UTOR, we have to modify UTOR to at least negotiate the 2-byte cell ID, but that could probably be done within the existing Tor negotiation. And an important thing is, as I mentioned earlier, that UTOR is compatible with existing Tor deployments. Is even if there's, you can actually run UTOR inside of a circuit where you have non-UTOR ORs or even OPs. So the OP or other ORs don't have to be aware of the fact that UTOR is being used. So we actually did a preliminary evaluation of the set of line blocking elimination. And for that configuration, we set up 3 relays. And we had 3 directory authorities just because of the way Tor was set up, with a single proxy communicating through the 3 relays using the exact same path. And this was using some Git version of Tor as specified up there. And each one of the links between the ORs and the OP was a normally distributed 50 millisecond delay. And we had a single lossy link between the last 2 ORs with between a 0 to 5% loss, or no, explicitly a 0 and a 5% loss. And for the experiment, we made requests to 40 of the popular sites on the internet using the Alexa Top 500. And we found that there were data sizes ranging from 10 kilobytes to 400 kilobytes. The analysis is shown here, with the x-axis being the time in seconds for the accumulation of, or for each of the downloads, and then for the fraction of completed downloads on the y-axis or the CDF. And when we look at Tor versus UTOR on the far left, we have that for 85% of the cases, Tor and UTOR performed identically. However, for some reason, we haven't gone into great detail in analyzing this at this point. The UTOR was able to actually outperform Tor for the remaining 15% of the cases for about a fraction or about a second faster performance. However, when we introduce the 5% loss, we see that there's actually a significant difference in performance between the two. And we noticed there was about a 20 to 30% difference on average for UTOR outperforming Tor. So I showed you how we did that, and let me go and show you what's going on for future work. Well, first of all, I did show you that UTOR shows promise. It definitely removed the head of line blocking. We got a nice performance boost, especially when there was lossiness in links. And we did this without having to rely on any user space networking libraries. And there was no need to change Tor significantly to use any other transports. And we did it without relying on UDP as well. But we can do more. We can investigate the improved congestion control, which is something that UTCP allows us to do. And we can also look into priority sending similar to Torquestra, such that we don't have to rely on 2 different TCP streams. And this would be a sender-side only enhancement. It doesn't require any more than just a single OR speaking using this priority sending to actually benefit from it. And there's also a question about what is the impact of head-of-line blocking on congestion control. If we eliminate head-of-line blocking, do we really need to even consider that much more about congestion control? And that's something we can analyze further with the software stack that we've got set up. And there's also the issue about out-of-order circuits. They're interesting, but they're potentially dangerous, and I enumerated those concerns earlier. And so, thank you for your attention. And if you're interested in more, you can go and find out more information at the URL provided. Thank you.
So you said that Tor puts each cell in its own TLS record. Mm-hmm. If something's changed in 0.25, that's not the case. It can send lots of, like a bunch of cells at the same time that all go in the same record and then maybe spill over a record and a portion of a cell goes into the next record. So if you send lots bursts of heavy traffic, then you no longer record aligned.
I think there might be some competing arguments there.
Minor correction. So the spec says that the cells can be arbitrarily packed and divided. The actual software always puts a whole number of cells in a record.
But it's not true. We've observed that it doesn't.
You're observing TCP chopping up the record after, but it's one.
No, no. We measure the sizes of, wait, is Tao in the room? Yes, Tao. You observe this.
It's a whole number of cells inside each record, I think. A whole number of cells inside each record, but not necessarily within each TCP packet.
Right.
So
then we are preserving record boundaries as, or cell boundaries.
It's not just one.
No, yes, so it can be several cells per record. So when did you observe this, that it's one cell per record?
No, sorry, that was...
one or more cells.
Right. Whole, it's whole.
Whole number. I see.
Your assertion that the TCP record length has to be less than 2 to the 14 wrong. It can be slightly more. So you should be slightly more generous when looking at that. The plain text fragmentation is limited to 2 to the 14, but once you put compression and then decrypto around that, it can be larger. You should be worried that you've So for a start, I assume you have some window sequence numbers that you prevent sequence number reuse.
At what at the TCP layer, or?
Well, when you are opportunistically trying these sequence numbers.
Oh right,
max,
right.
You do remember the sequence numbers that have been used and check that they are not.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's done in a secure fashion.
You're also turning TLS from a bomb oracle into a straight oracle, i.e., like DTLS. Attacks against DTLS, like timing attacks, have been significantly stronger.
That's a good point.
So, if nothing else, do not run it with anything less than OpenSSL 101E.
Okay.
And the AES NI code in that is still the CBC code with AES NI is still not constant time, which might be a little bit worrying if you are now doing this.
Well noted. Thank you.
So the other alternative to this would be to collapse TCP crypt and add unordered support to that, rather than having a separate TLS stack and UTCP and UTLS. Have you considered looking at TCP crypt stuff?
I'm not familiar, so I'll have to look into that.
It's collapsing TLS and TCP into one protocol that is crypt.
But by doing that, wouldn't we potentially have to do more modifications to Tor, which was
yes,
right. So that was kind of the trade-off, is that we were looking for a solution that required minimal changes to Tor and more changes on outside.
Amazing.
Similar question. Have you looked at TCP minion?
That's actually what this is.
Okay.
There's nomenclature issues, of course. In-house, we call it UTCP, and I think that's kind of what we were going with here. Maybe in-house. I don't know. Okay. Anyway.
Can you comment on how likely it is that relays will be willing to install a kernel module or run a pure virtual machine?
I mean, are there any relay operators here that want to comment on that? I mean, it's a difficult question to answer without, you know, even gotten out into the field and really started asking people what we would have to do to get them to buy into this. I mean, Roger's here. I think he might be able to say a few words about that, hopefully.
I think your best bet would be to find the people running really fast relays and try to get them to do it, and that would be where the best benefit comes from also. A lot of those people run dedicated hardware somewhere, and if you could convince them to change their kernel, they could. You'd be in better shape if you gave them an alternate kernel dev or something like that so they could just switch. That requires engineering effort, which historically researchers don't follow through on.
Speaking as someone who runs a couple of relays, I run them on OpenBSD and macOS.
Mm-hmm. So we have to get those Mac guys working on it, so that hopefully it gets mainstream sooner than later.
Yeah. I had a question about your detection methods of finding an actual frame within a buffer.
Mm-hmm.
What about packet-in-packet attacks to de-anonymize things?
Packet.
Someone pushes in a header
uh-huh.
in the tail end of a packet that simulates
The MAC should be strong enough to prevent that.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine that you're talking about potentially trying to break TLS as opposed to breaking UTLS, right?
In your detection, when you're doing UTLS and UTCP.
Right, but if the packet passes authentication, then it would pass authentication in regular TLS as well. So, I mean, if you can break TLS, then there's probably not much we're going to be able to do to prevent that at the UTLS layer.
Yeah, perhaps some corruption within at a lower level.
Well, I mean, actually, one of my colleagues asked me a question, an interesting question yesterday, which was, what if we go ahead and try to embed a TLS packet inside of another TLS packet from the same stream? And so if somebody were to go and do this, you could potentially imagine, for example, you send this big TLS packet with a TLS packet inside of it, but you intentionally chop off the first set of bits from being sent across the wire, or they just get lost, or whatever. I mean, you could be controlling the wire and just prevent them from going on the wire the first time, where you have the proper embedded TLS packet getting transmitted. And then when that gets sent across, your TLS application or the UTLS is going to read that. It's going to say, oh, we found a record. It's going to chop it out of the larger record that actually is expecting it to be expecting the larger record. And now you're going to have this case where when it goes in process of the larger record, it's going to go ahead and fail. However, you're talking about an attack from a OR to an OR, and all you're going to do is cause the circuit to, or the TCP stream to terminate, and I guess that would be the expected behavior anyway. And so I'm not sure. Maybe there are anonymity attacks that could be inside of this realm, but to me it's just not obvious. But I'm open to ideas, and we can go and talk about that later. Right. Yeah.
This UTCP, you can implement this on like closed source operating systems like Windows and OS X, or?
No, unfortunately, you'd have to have the vendor go ahead and build it into their system. Like I said, there's IETF efforts from Apple, and so hopefully maybe we'll see it in Mac OS, and if we see it in Mac OS, maybe that would convince Microsoft to do the same with Windows. Like I said, it was a few hundred lines of code change, so it's not like it's out of expectation that this could potentially happen in reality.
Do you have any idea like what the distribution of OS's is are running these Tor nodes? I mean, I would assume it would be mostly open source ones.
I'm going to defer to Roger or someone else who wants to take that question.
If you run a fast Tor relay on Windows, you will blue screen your Windows. It's able to handle networking applications. That's partly our fault and partly their fault. There are plenty of relays on Mac, mostly Linux, some FreeBSD.
Have you considered just patching a user space TCP stack so that people can just use raw sockets to inject their own packets? That's kind of a halfway house between virtualizing the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit, but we haven't found a TCP stack that we're excited about and we want to invest the time in at this point.
Sure.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting opportunity that would give us more portability. Okay. Was there another question over here?
Time for one more question.
All right, let's thank our speaker.